Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Doing fine, Russell. Yourself?
Real good, real good. I took a little trip to New York today. I really want to thank the Philadelphia Phillies bullpen for making it a fun day for me. And, you know, I'm hanging in there.
They aim to please.
They do. They really do. But anyhow, let's talk some hockey. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty here. We got Mike Ogiello from Hockey Buzz on. Mike, how are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm still picking up shards of glass from my throwing a glass against the wall last night after that incredible victory by the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Philadelphia Flyers.
Was there any jam in
that glass, Mike?
What was that?
Go ahead, Ant. What were you going to say?
What was the logo on the glass is what I wanted to know. Which one did you throw?
I think it was Labatt's or Molson's.
There you go. I was wondering if there was jam in it, but that's, you know, different coach. All right.
Maybe Jenny Cream Ale, but anyway. Okay.
Oh, yeah, I probably would throw that against the wall. So let's talk about right now. You know, it's funny. There's a President's Trophy, but there's really no name for the team that comes in last. You know, they probably should put a name to that. Because now, the only reason I say that, I only say it half sarcastically, because when I was growing up, there wasn't like a tank nation. There wasn't any reason for people to root for their team to lose. And I'd say in the last 5 to 10 years, this has become a thing now where if your team's out of it, you are now, you know, almost openly rooting for them to lose to get a high draft pick. So we've got a virtual tie with the Edmonton Oilers and the Toronto Maple Leafs, thanks to the Toronto Maple Leafs overtime win last night. And Mike, I understand what you're going for, but it's got to rip you apart too.
First of all, maybe the Greg Jolly Trophy or the Patrick Stefan Trophy, because, you know, you can't name it after Connor McDavid because he's actually a good player. Those guys, they're never going to have their names mentioned except
No. You're forgetting one. Alexander Daigle.
Doug Wickenheiser. You know, there's a number of them, but no. I mean, actually, it's not painful, because I think the one thing that Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello, and to an extent Mike Babcock, although sometimes I question his desire to go through this, was that they were up front and said, this is going to be painful. This is going to be a season where, you know, there's going to be a lot of transition, a lot of change. And they have they've played 43 players on their NHL roster this year, a number of trades. I mean, you know, and if at the end of this they end up with a top 3 or 4 pick, they finished 30th overall, they've traded Dion Phaneuf, they've gotten a lot of their youngsters some experience, this is a constructive year, even if they do finish last.
My question I have for you is, I guess for me, it's like I have to look at it from the point of view of this as being Babcock's first year, much like with Dave Haxtell. You're trying to establish early on a, you know, a mindset in the locker room amongst the players in this circumstance. And even though I guess management can have that, maybe that viewpoint of we're in rebuild mode, but the coach can't. He's got to kind of set a certain standard, even, you know, certainly right from the get-go. Now, again, a guy like Haxtell, first year in the NHL, it's a requirement. And Babcock obviously has, you know, a prior, you know, record in the league and everything. But there's something to that, too, you would say, right?
Yeah, I mean, let's say this. I mean, Babcock at no time has ever bought into this publicly. And
no.
He has been, you know, he can't. You really can't. And the players can't as well. He's been, you know, I want effort. I want, you know, the proper structure. I want these players to hustle, to work. I mean, when they lost 5-1 to Columbus on Wednesday, you know, he really came out after the game and not ripped them, but, you know, really questioned the effort and said, you know, these are some kids, you know, like Nylander and Kapanen. He didn't name them, but he said, you know, we have kids that are going back to the American Hockey League to play in the Calder Cup playoffs, and if they show this kind of effort and they give away the puck, you know, they're not going to be winning anything. And, you know, I think he just wants the players that are on this team to buy into what his, you know, system was and play it to the best of their ability. I mean, the management of this has been Lou Lamoriello, because, you know, when you have P.A. Parenteau on your top line for probably three quarters of the year, that's a statement of how bad your team is. Nothing against P.A. Parenteau, but he's not a top line player. So they manage this by making a lot of trades and by not having a lot of talent on the roster.
I'll tell you what, though, Mike. I mean, if you're shooting for 30th, I have to give the edge to the Edmonton Oilers because, I mean, not to the Edmonton. I'm sorry, to your team, because the Edmonton Oilers are playing the Vancouver Canucks, and we saw what the Canucks didn't do the other day, and so I would have to think that the Oilers can definitely beat Vancouver, and New Jersey will, if not beat Toronto regulation, will probably beat them in overtime in Eliash's last game, and so, or we think is his last home game, and so I think that will work out for you. But it's amazing how it's worked out to this last, you know, weekend of the season. And the only difference is, though, like last year, you were guaranteed one of the top two. This year, it's one of the top four, which is still really good. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But you know, if this were last year, the return would most likely be better. So it's still going to be really good, but you probably didn't think it was coming down to this late in the season, I'm sure.
No, I mean, especially when they went through that long losing streak just before and just after the trade deadline, I thought they were, you know, they were in perfect position to draft 30th. And then they called up all the kids at the deadline, and after they sort of got acclimated to the NHL, you know, you saw Nylander score 3 points last night. Well, they had Nylander and Zach Hyman and Shostakov and Connor Brown, and all these kids played really well. They carried forth the confidence they had with the Marlies, and they played that way in the American Hockey or in the National Hockey League. But then they sent four of them down. They were winning too much. I mean, of course, Lamoriello's not going to say that. The organization's not going to say that. But when they lose, you know, five of the last seven games after they send those players down, it had the desired effect. You know, tomorrow night, Corey Schneider is going to be playing for New Jersey because Kincaid played the previous game.
Right.
It's the home finale in Newark. You know, very possibly is Eliash's last game. There's the Lou Lamoriello factor, which I'm sure, you know, the organization would like to beat Lou's team. And from what I understand, Garrett Sparks is going to be starting in net for the Leafs and not Bernier. And, you know, Bernier pretty much beat the Flyers almost on his own, him and Nylander, because he had 41 saves last night.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in terms of Bernier, he was just – you could tell he was locked in almost from the beginning for the most part, with the exception of the Shen, the Couturier-Deschenes play where he wasn't quite set, but that pass got on net so fast that a lot of goalies wouldn't have been set. But Bernier, you know, I got to tell you, he's at least based on my impression of him last night, he had a really good game. Mike, in terms of long-term with him in Toronto, what are your views on Bernier?
Well, it's funny because I think the impression that is in Babcock's head, at least from the comments that he's made about Bernier, I think he's ready to move on. I think he doesn't have a lot of confidence in him. It's funny that Bernier started playing really well after Reimer was traded, after he was pretty much, you know, you're going to be the number one, or at least you're going to share every other game with Sparks. He's played very well. It was that competition with Reimer that, like, if he slipped up one game, Reimer was going to be in net. And, you know, there have been times where, you know, Bernier was the third star of the game and Babcock basically, you know, didn't give him a lot of credit and then said, well, I measure success by victories. Even though, you know, he had made 30 or 35 saves, he didn't seem to really want to give him a lot of credit. So I think he's got 1 year left in his contract. He could be traded if there's somebody out there that's interested. But, you know, if they move on from Bernier, you know, they're looking at either going with a couple youngsters like Bebo and Sparks, or going out and getting themselves a veteran, a plugger like a Cam Ward for a year or two, or maybe making a bigger deal and going after Frederick Anderson. But I seem to think that they're not going to stick with Bernier.
Okay, I mean, that's fair. So I'll tell you, coming down the stretch here, probably the most interesting team for me is the Columbus Blue Jackets, because they're going to get probably somewhere, you know, in the top six, something like that, maybe top seven. And they're a better team than that. But yet this year they do what they do every year, and, you know, they struggle. They finished kind of strong, but they bottomed out so far this year that they can't help but be, you know, one of the five, six, seven worst teams in the league. And so, I don't know, that's got to make you feel kind of weird, because, like, Toronto, they're not going to be as good as Columbus next year. And if Columbus were to get Matthews, you know, Columbus could almost be a playoff team. It's just, you know, you kind of wonder if they sort of at some point saw this happening and just then by design said, you know what, let's just get a high draft pick again, and then hopefully we don't have the injuries next year, and we'll be that much better. Because otherwise Columbus probably could have done a little better this year, and you know, I think they could have ended up probably right where Buffalo is, but they didn't. They chose not to.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
First.
Okay.
For me, again.
You go first.
Okay, Mike, I'm sorry. I guess I'm looking at the Blue Jackets, and what was the biggest issue that they probably have is their blue line. I mean, it still is it is a concern, but at least they feel like now there's a core in place there, especially adding Jones to the mix. And then, again, you're right. If they play it right, if they somehow manage to get into the catbird seat and manage to get a guy like Matthews. But even another guy I would also mention as well, and you've been very high on him, is Dubois is another guy. You know, even if they don't have that high, he's a guy who could potentially be, in terms of not as quick a franchise player replacement as a Matthews would be, but a Dubois might be a guy who fits in a larger, more physical center over time, might actually play fairly well for them over the long haul. So, yeah, it's almost, and again, it is a bit of a tank, but I guess there's a structure to it here in terms of them addressing their weakest point with a franchise level defenseman in Jones. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, they're obviously missing the number one center now that they've traded Johansson. I mean, Wennberg has played, and he's played pretty decently, but I mean, I don't think he projects as the number one center, so I'm sure they're hoping they can get Matthews or Dubois. Where I think it really has to be addressed is the consistent injury-plagued seasons that Bobrovsky has had. He has ruined their seasons, I think, 2 years in a row. I mean, he was out for, I think, 2 months last year. And when he came back, they had that, 16-4 run at the end of the season and climbed to respectability. And this year, I think he was on the injured reserve three times. Now, they may have discovered a good young goaltender in Korpisalo. They gave him some opportunities. He played well. But how many years can you rely on a goaltender who's making over $7 million a year, who's won a Vezina trophy, but keeps getting hurt, and he keeps ruining their seasons when he does?
Ant, what's your take on that?
Yeah, Bob's interesting because, again, I mean, certainly going back for Flyers fans and, you know, with the choice between, you know, the Flyers making decisions between him, you know, either keeping him on board or going with Ilya Bryzgalov, and we all saw how that went. But in terms of Bob's interesting because, again, one of the things we always noticed when he was when he was affiliated, his lateral movement was just one of the best I've ever seen in terms of a lot of goaltenders in the NHL. And that explosive push off, I mean, in terms of the injuries, I have to go back to his injury history, but a number of them are lower body injuries. And I'd have to sometimes wonder if he made certain adjustments in regards to, you know, in terms of his stance, in terms of coming across the crease. I do have to sometimes wonder, but again, over the long haul, they have to make a decision with Bobrovsky in terms of the commitment that they've made to him, as Mike has alluded to. But to me, I've always had that sort of thing in my mind where he's almost too explosive, down low, and to the point where I think he may put himself in injury danger. And that's one of the things I would be taking a look at there with him.
Yeah, see, I like that. I like that thought. I mean, I also look at Calgary, and 2 years ago they were a really hard team to play against. This year, not as hard, but obviously goaltending was their issue. They're not going to be able to get a goaltender in this draft that's going to help them right away, and honestly, this is not a strong goaltending draft anyhow. So that problem's still going to exist for them, Mike, unless we feel like they're going to make some sort of trade. I don't know if they would trade a first overall pick for a really young, tremendous goalie. To me, it seems like I think they might do that, but I'm not 100%. What's your thought?
Are we talking about Calgary here, or are we talking about Columbus?
Calgary. Calgary.
Yeah, with Calgary, I actually think what they're going to do is maybe a stopgap, like a Cam Ward. Because, you know, maybe they think Gillies in their organization can develop in a year or two. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
You know, they're going to move on from Hiller. Hiller will be goaltending in the Swiss League because that's, I think, the only place I think they'll hire him. Kari Ramo, I'm sure Eklund can get him a job because I don't think anybody in the NHL will give him one.
For the listeners, wait, we've got to stop it there. For the listeners of this show and for Ant, because he may not know, early in the season, Eck was pretty much rooting for Kari Ramo and was basically saying that this was going to be his year, this is going to be a great year for him, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah, so... but I Ordeo has done a pretty decent job down the stretch. I mean, they're not a particularly strong defensive team. So in some instances, he's been hung out to dry. But I think they like Gillies. But I think what they will probably need is
we just don't know where Gillies is at after. I think he had an ACL, so we just don't know where he's going to be at and how long it'll take him. You know,
true. It could take a year. It could take 2 years. It could take 3 years.
Yeah.
But I mean, Cam Ward at times has looked good with Carolina. He's a Western Canada guy, and maybe they can get him at a reduced rate. But, you know, other than him, it's like the only name that's really out there in terms of, you know, oh, this guy could be traded is Freddie Anderson. And because he's an RFA. But, you know, how many places can Freddie Anderson go? I've heard Toronto. I've heard Calgary. I've heard two or three other places. So you don't know.
Yeah, maybe Calgary swaps their first-round pick with Anaheim's first-round pick for Freddie Anderson. You know, I mean, I could see something like that happening because – it's just they're in a situation where, I don't want to call them like the 76ers or anything, but they've got enough young talent and they just signed Jankowski. They really need that veteran goalie or they're going nowhere for a couple of years until Gillies is ready.
Yeah, you add that. You also had Shinkrook to the mix as well. And that was, I thought, a really good trade on their part. They're stockpiling some pretty good talent. But again, you're right. You have to go back there and look at their goaltending situation and say, what can they do to take the next step? And again, you have to look at them from the point of view of, did they, you know, they had such a remarkable run last year that you kind of were sort of thinking, you know, that bubble's going to potentially pop. And that's exactly what happened to them this season in year two. I mean, with a minus 30 goal differential, obviously, as we stated, the goaltending has certainly failed them in that circumstance. So could there be pressure up there in terms of bringing in a goaltender? I don't know if they would be, you know, you mentioned also, again, possibly if Toronto decides it moves on from Bernier, would Bernier be a possibility there as well? I would potentially look at that. But Ward's another one. Yeah, I would certainly agree. Anderson would be like a real, I mean, that's to me would be a real sort of, in my mind, a statement kind of acquisition. In that case, where Calgary's pretty much signaling that they're planning on really making a move back, really hard move up the ladder in terms of whatever position they are in terms of the process that they are in terms of becoming a consistent contender in the West.
All right, so let's shuffle the deck. Go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead. I was going to say quickly, there was talk about Bernier and Calgary back in, I think it was November or December before he got sent to the minors. Burke was there, and Brad Treliving were in Toronto a couple times to watch him play. And based on the fact that he's played better in the latter part of the season, you know, maybe there'll be renewed interest during the off season. The other name that I don't think that Tampa Bay is going to want to trade him. But you know, if they sign Bishop to a long-term extension, then they may have to consider trading Vasilevskiy, and they could get a lot of value for Vasilevskiy.
True, but they probably wouldn't do it this year because if they still look at themselves as a cup team, they'll ride him out through his RFA and then one of those years trade him.
Right. I agree.
And that's what I think. Let's shuffle the deck, though, Ant. Let's talk about what's going on now in the stretch for these playoffs. And we'll save the Flyers for last because, you know, there'll be a lot of talk with that one. But the what I'm finding interesting now is, and I said this morning when I went on Sirius because they were talking about the Detroit Ranger game, how maybe it would be hard for Detroit to win. But I said, no, you know, I really got the feeling that the Rangers are going to really rest their guys now. I mean, the Islanders just, they did what they needed to do, and now there's really nothing for the Rangers to gain other than more injuries. And so, like, I'm hearing, like, guys like Zuccarello and at least two or three other players are going to be resting. You know, it's like, basically, Lundqvist won't be there, Zuccarello won't be there, you know, McDonough's already not going to be there, Girardi won't be in, Stahlberg, of all people, won't be in. And so, it almost looks like they want to play Florida in the first round. And I don't blame them.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're going to win.
I would, too, if I was them.
Yeah, but I would, too,
no,
yeah.
That's what it looks like. The matchup's definitely more – I think it's definitely a much more advantageous matchup for them to play Florida. As good as Florida has been this year, and you obviously take that situation at your peril. But again, you're looking at a Rangers team that's got all the, you know, the playoff experience in the world against the Florida team. That, I mean, granted, there's some veterans on that team. There's some pretty good veterans on that team. But again, it's been you know, for Florida, it's been some time that they've been in this kind of a situation. So again, the Rangers could potentially have the advantage there. And again, you kind of want to let, you know, the Islanders want number three, and they want to be put. They want to go through the meat grinder playing the Penguins the way they're rolling right now. You know, good. If I'm the Rangers, I'm like, go right ahead. Get, you know, have fun playing the Penguins if you guys want to, and take it by all means. Take it to seven games and go to double or triple overtime at least a couple times, and they'll hope to be on the other side of that. But again, to be in the Atlantic side of the bracket there, the Rangers have a decent chance of getting out of round one against Florida. Second round against whoever they might end up with at this point now would be Tampa Bay. That might be a little bit of that might end up being a tougher out. But again, with Stamkos being, you know, in the situation he's in, obviously, that it helps and certainly helps them a bit there. And again, if I'm the Rangers, yeah, I'd sit probably right where I'm at and say, I'll take my chances with the Panthers.
And Mike, before you answer, I just want to ask. You may know this, Mike. I certainly don't know. Where do these people get these rubber rats? Who makes these rubber rats? I don't understand it.
Apparently, they were selling them at the arena or giving them out at the arena, which, you know, I mean, honestly,
which is ridiculous because that could penalize the team. Why would they do that?
Right. Have we not learned anything from bat night or from, you know, seat cushion night at baseball games where they end up on the field in the seventh inning when there's a bad call? I mean, it's ridiculous, and they did get penalized against New Jersey for throwing them on the ice. So, you know, you cannot underestimate the stupidity of some fans. Now, back to the whole situation with the Rangers. I mean, yes, they would rather play Florida, but be careful what you wish for, because I mean, I know that Florida has got a lot of young players, but they, you know, they have Luongo, they have some experience on that team. A guy like Willie Mitchell, supposedly he's going to come back to the playoffs after sitting out a large number of games. Supposedly they're going to get Trocheck back around the middle of the first round. I mean, Pittsburgh is one of the hottest teams in the league, and you want to avoid them, but I don't think Florida is going to be a cakewalk. If I'm Pittsburgh, I definitely want to play the Islanders because they're dropping like flies. I mean, how many more people are going to break their legs? You know, Andre breaks his leg. Hamonic is out. He may play, but I'm sure he's not going to be 100%. I mean, they're losing players left and right, and Thomas Greiss is their number one goalie in the playoffs. That's a first round exit if you ask me.
And not only that with Greiss, but again, Pittsburgh knows Greiss. That's the other thing too. I mean, he's their former backup, so a lot of the players that are already on the Penguins roster know his tendencies to begin with. So you know they're licking their they're potentially licking their chops to go up against them because they've played against them enough in practice. So that's one thing to look at. And I agree with you, Mike, in terms of for the Rangers, in terms of choosing it against Pittsburgh versus Florida, it is very much a pick your poison situation. That's just kind of the way, you know, things potentially will go out. And there's definitely – that's not meant to be disrespect at all to the Florida Panthers. I think they're a very good team. It's just if I'm choosing between having to play the Penguins or the Panthers, it's the arsenic versus the versus the turpentine. Which one do you want to take?
All right, so now let's let's tackle the other one where, you know, it's the Detroit, Boston, Philly angle, and it's really getting kind of weird because at this point, let's say Detroit beats the Rangers. Okay, so they may have the edge. Even though it looks lopsided with Boston and Ottawa, that could be a really tough game, and you don't know what's going to happen in the sense that will it go to overtime or not, and then that certainly affects things a different way. And then the Flyers game, it looks like they're overmatched, but you don't know. They might be able to eke out a point. It's one of these weird things, Ant, where my gut feeling is if I'm Philly, I've got to give it absolutely everything I have against the Penguins.
Oh, they have a choice.
At least to get a 1 point, because if they don't, it's just, even though the Islanders are going to definitely play their backup goalie and maybe sit a player or two, you just don't want to be in that position if you can help it. That's just the way I look at it. Like, it's do or die, it seems like.
No, I completely agree with that, Russ. It's definitely they're in a very precarious spot. Actually, I was just looking at the stat board here real quick in terms of the wild card, not realizing here, Boston and Philadelphia have the exact same record home and away. In terms of Boston has 17-17-6 at home, and Philly is 17-17-6 on the road.
Yeah,
you would look at those two marks and say that's not marks of a playoff team in either circumstance,
right?
In terms of where they're at, but then you look at obviously the differential with plus 15 for Boston versus minus 9 for Philadelphia. But I just noticed, I'm just looking at this board and going, "Holy crap!" But but in terms of Philly doesn't have a again. They've put themselves in this position now again. Whether or not they're a team that's out of gas because of all the back-to-backs that they've played at this point. Now, again, to me, it's the position they put themselves in from having a slow start at the beginning of the season, and most people thinking this was going to be a non-playoff year anyway. But from their perspective, the Pittsburgh game, you got to empty the bucket. They have no matter what the situation is here, you went through your issues in the, against Detroit and Pittsburgh, obviously earlier, and obviously the game last night, and they looked like they finally started to get things together in the third period before the McDonald penalty in overtime, and then they lost at them. But in their circumstance, these last two games, it has to be, in my mind, 2 points. If you squeeze, great. If you squeeze a point, okay, but two at this point right now is preferable. Just for their own mental stability, and to say to themselves, at least going into the playoffs, if they do make it, that they go in on somewhat of a high note, even if Pittsburgh's got guys sitting. This is where they need to prove to themselves that they belong there. And currently, this past week, last three games, they don't look like they belong anywhere near the playoffs.
Yeah, and before you answer, Mike, in case your answer is long-winded, I want to tell people, and it probably will be. I want to tell people we'll probably go 5 minutes in overtime. So when we run out, just, let the show run for another 5 minutes, go get a cup of coffee, whatever, and then you can come back and go into the archives and listen to the rest of it. But what's your feeling on it?
Well, as you know, I picked Detroit to be the one that finished out of the playoffs. But right now, with them having the prospect of facing the Hartford Wolfpack tomorrow, they're probably gonna win, and they'll probably end up with 95 points. So it comes down to Boston and Philadelphia. And what I saw yesterday at Wells Fargo, I mean, I saw a team that, in spite of coming back from 3-1 and tying the game, I saw a team that was spent. I mean, Giroux, they ISO'd him. I think it was in the third period on the bench, and the guy looked like he was about to croak. And, I know that he took that big hit. I know that Voracek is playing at not 100%. Their defense is shorthanded.
Maybe 70, I think.
Yeah,
Mason
reportedly has a lower body injury, and he's been playing all these games. It's like, it's been a valiant effort, but I mean, right now, I don't know if they have a lot left in the tank, but yes, you're right. They have to empty the tank against Pittsburgh and worry about the Islanders game on Sunday.
Yeah, and you know what, the one thing that was a little worrisome, I heard Keith Jones on local radio today say that he interviewed Haxtell before the game, and basically Haxtell said his speech was, going to be go out there with your pants on fire in the first period, and we didn't see that.
No, we didn't. Not to be. Well, this is the way my view on it was. I thought the effort early, there was definitely an effort early on there. They looked like they were pushing it, The problem was, again, and this is where the mental, they may have physically sort of in their head going, yeah, we're going to push our legs and everything. But I'm wondering about upstairs right now, because while they're pushing in it, and there's efforts, the play was not crisp. Certainly it was, last week before the Pittsburgh game, where they really were just tape to tape. The system was being played to a T, and they looked fent and they looked good. I think there were, and I said this to Jay Greenberg last post game, and I said to him, we were having this discussion. He said, "I thought the effort was there." I said, "Yeah, I think the effort was there. It's just I don't know if it's upstairs right now for them, where they're physically, can get into that mode of we can push, but in terms of being that level of crispness that you need at this point mentally." Pass, sticks, pucks on the tape, tape to tape passes. That's just, I didn't see that. And that was the biggest problem in my mind.
Yeah. All right. So, Mike, we're going to finish with a Leafs topic. It turned into a Leafs topic. And until this guy signs or doesn't sign, it'll be a Leafs topic. And Jimmy Vesey wins the Hobie. And I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. I kind of tweeted out like maybe half season this guy should be the Hobie Baker winner because he was just so dominant, and that was really one of the only reasons Harvard was as good as they were. So he does that, and then today, his dad comes out and speaks, and there's this whole, I call it a campaign, and I'll put it in parentheses, and I don't want to say it was rehearsed, but I think there was a pretty good discussion that went on and how they should handle this and just try and muddy the waters as much as they can so there wouldn't be a tampering or anything else. And it seems like they've achieved that result because, for the articles being written, it's just like there's no favoritism. We don't know if VC's going to go to Toronto or Boston. All of a sudden there's like all this question. And I think there's probably less question in their mind, but he's certainly not going to give up the answer anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, the comments that came out, it was Kevin Paul DuPont who tweeted out the info about Jimmy Vesey Sr., his status as a scout with the Maple Leafs would not have any kind of determination on his son's destination. But the one that I found curious was that if it was up to him, he would not want his son to play for Boston based on the pressure of the being the hometown boy. Being that.
But we have to say he said it as a dad. I think that was funny and cute how he added that, because that's almost like the card where he's allowed to play the dad card and not be in any team employee. I think that's the important part, right, Mike?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said to you, I thought this was perfect anti-tampering language because, I mean, okay, say, he listens to his father and he wipes, he doesn't consider Boston, or listens to his dad and accepts his counsel and not to go to Boston because all the pressure would be on there. Let me see. Where is he going to go? Could it be the place where his father is employed and his brother was drafted in the sixth round in 2014? I wonder.
And what's your take on this?
And when I saw the comment, I saw it earlier this evening, and I was like, VC Senior's comment, I was like, I'll believe it when I see it when he doesn't sign with the Maple Leafs. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with it. If he signs with somebody else, great. Then okay. Then at that point. But until that moment comes where I actually see him signing elsewhere, then that's where I'm going to be at. And Mike's right. That was absolutely perfect anti-tampering language. It was my reaction to it. I'm like, boy, you want to pit that thing right bullseye, pull that thing right where you needed to put it. That was perfect. So, yeah, I'll wait, and I won't hold my breath for too long with regards to that. In my mind right now, I still fully expect him to see him in blue and white.
Now, I personally think that what's going to end up happening is that Toronto is going to end up trading for his rights because, language that David Poile used when VC came out and said, I'm not signing in Nashville, I mean, it was all setting up. He got bad counsel. Well, who was he getting bad counsel from? He's insinuating, and he said that VC Senior had said, oh, he's going to sign with Nashville, and then all of a sudden he didn't. So he's indicating there's some meddling there with the father, and of course the father is an employee of the Maple Leafs. So he's setting up the tampering charge. So that's why I think there'll be a trade of a draft pick to get his rights, and that will wipe the slate clean.
And that's Lou, too, in this circumstance. I could see Lou, old school back, back room, kind of like, hey, Dave, this is Lou. What can we do to work this thing out,
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, one more thing, Ant, because, Mike and I have had a chance to talk about this, but I haven't asked you your opinion. I don't know if you have one, but on the Russian under-18 team and the whole Meldonian thing, do you have a take on that?
My take on it is, and this is a conversation I had with, I think it was with Frank Saravalli from TSN last night. We were in the commissary talking about it, and I looked at him and I said, I was pretty sure I remember seeing something about the Russian ADA. They had their credentials pulled like a couple months ago, so there was sort of a little bit of a precursor to this potentially coming down. I don't think we thought it was going to be quite on this scale.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's I don't want to say old habits die hard in terms of the old Eastern Bloc mindsets in terms of getting advantages and things of that sort. And again, there's different certain concepts with regards to medicines and things of that sort, East versus West. But
yeah,
an entire squad. It just, to me, it was just like, there was part of me that was like, my jaw dropped, and then another part of me went, I'm not as surprised as I thought I would be.
Okay. It would have been a little
circumstance, so.
It would have been a little suspicious to see the under 18 team all having beards like Joe Thornton, because that was the first thing I was thinking of. It's like you know, remember the old things about the East German women having beards in the 70s.
Yeah, just feed the kids bear. I mean, that's what I'm planning on doing this summer when I go to Moscow. I'm going to eat bear when I get there. That's my plan. Feed the kids bear. That'll grow. They'll get good strong muscles and.
That's perfect. I just feel bad. I feel bad for German Rupstaff because, he's supposed to be a first rounder. He hasn't really been seen that much. He was in the Junior A Challenge. This would have been a great tournament for him, people to get last minute scouting in on him and make him that first round pick. And now, the word comes out that maybe this team's been on this drug for 2 years. And so whether he was or wasn't, he's getting lumped in with the team. And now I have a feeling it'll affect his draft position, like maybe to late second. So we'll see. I mean, it's just it's tough on the kids. But, Mike, we appreciate you coming on. Everybody should check him out at Mike in Buffalo on Twitter, Hockey Buzz, everywhere else. And definitely keep an eye on his Twitter feed tomorrow because, if the Leafs do pull out a win and Edmonton does lose, there'll be some good tweets. I predict that.
Yeah, but if
–
Go ahead.
Yeah, Mike, you first. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but at a certain point, if the Leafs are leading, you're just going to have one long word. No!
And we won't talk about the messages that he'll be sending to Russ because, what you guys get online from Mike is it's Mike filters. It's filtered for the most part. But goodness gracious, the messages I saw flying through that Russ kept showing to me in the press box last night from Mike to Russ on Messenger. Yeah.
Yep. It's for real.
That's all I'm going to say. Yeah.
Thanks. That's going to end this episode. We'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.
This Easter, take the family exploring when you upgrade to Sky Movies. Discover over 1,000 fun-filled tales with movies on demand. Go on an epic journey with Inside Out. Tiptoe around T-Rexes with Jurassic World. And learn every spell in the book with the return of the Harry Potter Channel. All this adventure without even leaving the house. Upgrade to Sky Movies. Half price for 6 months. Search Sky Movies. Sky. Believe in better. Sky TV compatible box broadband speed required. New Sky Movies customers only. 9 extra a month for 6 months, then standard price currently 18. Replaces current TV offer. Terms apply.